Right now, it's nearly 11:30, time for Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, kicking off the show as usual with an animal tune. You may know this one here on WMNF.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night. Black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
That, of course, was the Beatles' Blackbird, an animal tune of sorts. Written by Paul McCartney, who has a connection to today's guest, Dan Matthews. We're already getting way ahead of ourselves as we ease into this edition of Talking Animals on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And streaming live via our fabulous website, WMNF.org. My name's Duncan Strauss, and I'll be here till noon today with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Indeed, the show primarily seeks to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your phone calls and emails, from assorted other sources. But we're also quite interested in celebrating animals through music, comedy, and other means. We've always aimed for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean if you care to visit our website, talkinganimals.net. Indeed, the website offers archives of all our past shows, and we're now podcasting, baby, on iTunes, no less, including all our initial programs on WMNF, which have featured an array of illustrious figures from the animal world or notable folks from other fields who have a legitimate tie to animal welfare. Today's edition very much extends the show's tradition of speaking with fascinating folks from all walks of animal life, with the conversation we'll have momentarily with our guest, the aforementioned Dan Matthews, the vice president of PETA, and the figure responsible for bringing Paul McCartney, Chrissy Hynde, Morrissey, Pamela Anderson, and many others into the PETA fold, and, not coincidentally, many of the more attention-grabbing campaigns. Dan has just published an autobiography, Committed, a rabble-rouser's memoir, which chronicles his 20-plus years at PETA, starting as a receptionist. It's a really good, informative, fascinating book and a hell of a fun, funny read. We'll find out lots more about the book, things covered in it and not covered in it, when Dan Matthews joins us on Talking Animals in a moment. As always, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Want to quickly, as we always try to do, hit a couple either animal news items and or announcements. So Start off with this. The Tampa metropolitan area tied with Baltimore for 8th in compassion for animals, according to a new comparison of the largest U.S. cities, the Humane Society of the United States announced. The first ever Humane Index is comprised of a dozen factors selected to provide a basis for comparing the relative humaneness of the nation's largest metropolitan areas. The index includes topics related to pets, farm animals, wildlife, animals and entertainment, and advocacy for animals, and demonstrates that Americans extend their compassion beyond the millions of pets who share our homes. The Humane Index revealed that San Francisco is America's most humane city. Seattle, Portland, Washington, and San Diego follow in order of humaneness. And the Humane Index revealed several positive aspects about the treatment of animals in the metropolitan Tampa area, including citizen advocates' rule. Tampa ranked 4th among Humane Index cities for support of the HUS efforts to protect animals. Grabbing cameras, not shotguns. Florida has more than 14 bird watchers for every hunter. Animal news that's fit to print. The Tampa Tribune published 631 articles regarding animal issues during the past year, putting the paper in the top 5 of major metropolitan dailies, publishing articles about animals on a per capita basis. So, room for improvement, of course, buying puppies in the window, i.e. pet stores, and supporting puppy mills, urging dining establishments to think outside the cage, as they say, and supporting animal-free entertainment, and there's lots of sort of minuses there. So with all the creatures on display and entertaining and whatever in Tampa, they ranked 22nd place nationally in that. So room for improvement, but still pretty darn good. So we'll just keep getting better, right? And on a related note, the ASPCA and the NMHPHC, No More Homeless Pets in Hillsborough County, are hosting a spring pet adoption expo on Saturday, May 19th. Over 20 animal rescue groups, as well as Hillsborough County Animal Services and the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, will be present with hundreds of dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens looking for forever homes. The event also features pet merchandise, door prizes, and demonstrations on topics such as disaster preparedness, pet behavior, and ask a veterinarian. So that's Saturday, May 19th, starting at 10 a.m. at the Florida State Fairgrounds Special Event Building, 4800 Highway 301 in good old Tampa. Free parking is available using the fairgrounds entrance on Orient Road. Admission is free. Donations are accepted. For more information about the Adoption Expo, please visit tampapets.org, or you can email info@tampapets.org or call 813-920-8329. That's 813-920-8329. So with that, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Ellen DeGeneres with a snippet of a piece called Licking a Frog on today's Comedy Corner here on WMNF.
I don't sniff poop, but I have licked a frog once. Well, it was Jeremiah. Here's what happened. He wanted some wine, and so... How many people, by round of applause, knew that if you licked a frog, you got high? There was a fad going around. But how many people, by round of applause, are just amazed you're hearing that for the first time and you had no idea? That's why I ask people to play. It is amazing to me that that was... How desperate are we to get high? That that's a fad going around, that if you lick a frog... And how many animals did we go through? Here, lick the anus of a mongoose. See what happens. You could get high. I was wrong about the raccoon, yes, but... Imagine that even catching on, that you're at a cocktail party with a frog in your hand, just chatting away. Right. That's what I said. I'm like, yes. Another frog. You'd like two frogs.
All right. That was Ellen DeGeneres with a part of a piece called Licking a Frog, taken from her album Taste This. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals on 88.5 WMNF. The station website is WMNF.org. The show website is TalkingAnimals.net. where not only all our past programs are archived, but many are now available as podcasts in iTunes and other so-called podcatchers. We enjoy saying podcatchers, don't we? So, also on our site, of course, there are pieces written about us. We thank Creative Loafing and the Palm Beach Post, who both ran articles about us last week. And there's more there, too, including a calendar of pet events taking place in and around Tampa and a place to sign up for our email list so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests and remind you when the show will next air here on WMNF. So that's all on TalkingAnimals.net. It's nearly time to welcome today's guest, Dan Matthews. So let me quickly outline a few important details about him. As I touched on a few moments ago, Dan is the vice president of PETA, the figure responsible for bringing Paul McCartney and Chrissy Hynde, Morrissey, Pamela Anderson, and many others into the PETA fold. And, not coincidentally, many of the more attention-grabbing campaigns. He's just published an autobiography, Committed, a rabble-rousers memoir, which chronicles his 20-plus years at PETA, starting out as a receptionist there. It's a wonderfully written book full of wry observations and often hilarious accounts of staging protests, launching campaigns, and the various ways he's approached rockers, actors, and other celebs, or how in some cases they approached him, to help carry out those efforts. Among Dan's famous friends who offered book blurbs is Lily Tomlin, who noted that his writing is, quote, like David Sedaris, but with a mission, end quote. So that's about right, really. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dan Matthews to Talking Animals. Dan, are you there?
Yes. How's everybody doing?
Good. How about you? Thanks so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So let's jump right into the book, of course. In the first 23 pages of the book or so, you make references to growing up in Newport Beach, where I grew up, living in Costa Mesa, where I lived, then spending some years in Tampa, where I'm speaking with you from now. So I can't help wondering, is each copy of the book customized that way for each reader?
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
Cool.
I have been a bit of a gypsy path in my day. I mean, I grew up in Southern California, but I never really felt like I belonged there. So I did do a stint in Tampa, actually, Brandon, and then lived in Italy for a few years. And I started getting involved in animal rights when I was in Orange County. We took in all the stray cats in the neighborhood, you know, after we found that the bullies on the block were crushing the cats' skulls and dumpster lids and doing other disgusting things like stringing up fish hooks inside the garage vent to ensnare any cats who dared go in the garage and put their footprints, their paw prints on this guy's shiny red car. So I learned at a very young age that animals need some help. And it became a little bit more personal when the same people who were gay bashing me when I was in school were the same guys who were mutilating the alley cats. And it taught me at a very young age that the kind of ignorance that drives people to be violent is very similar no matter who they're being violent to. And the more, of course, I learned about the horrors that happen in factory farms and slaughterhouses and circuses and laboratories, I got more and more involved. But I actually was quite a foot dragger. I did not want to be an activist. I thought there was no way I would ever become a vegetarian. But the more I learned, the more I felt a nagging responsibility. And so I've been with PETA now for, 22 years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and we're going to come back to some of those things that you did later get into in a moment, but yeah, I mean, in terms of sort of growing up in Orange County on a more serious note, I mean, you do in the book provide a pretty unflinching portrait of your childhood and the formative years, and, you know, money obviously was extremely tight, you were ostracized and bullied and beaten at school, but at the same time, you really make clear that your family you know, constantly took in stray and abandoned animals, which you kind of alluded to, and you and your family always seemed to remain upbeat, spirited, have a blast. And so, you know, I'm curious to what extent did that background and the spirit it fostered make you kind of uniquely prepared, maybe even uniquely qualified for the work you've done at PETA these last 22 years?
Well, I think it probably helped me in two ways. One is that I always have seen life as a big black comedy. I'm really, as much as I'm dismayed by human behavior and how destructive and self-destructive our species can be, I'm also kind of amused by it. You just have to scratch your head and wonder and laugh sometimes. And I've always been able to make a little bit more sense of that through my writing. I think being the target of bullying and all that when I was young also gave me a really thick skin, which better prepared me for my life as an activist later on. And I really, you know, thank my lucky stars for that now, because as hellish as it was at the time, I can endure a lot of really stressful, intense situations now because I was just prepared for it from such a young age, whereas I think other people get a little flipped out by being in the hot seat, and I guess I'm just used to it.
Yeah, that's one thing that really comes across in the book, and just, you know, anybody who's kind of followed your career outside of the book as well, is that, you know, you seem pretty unflappable. I mean, really, I guess it's the sense of humor, and again, maybe those early experiences, but, you know, there were some pretty pretty nutty adventures that you sort of chronicle in the book, and it seemed like you were just quick on your feet and didn't ever panic and sort of deftly maneuvered through.
Well, I think, you know, one of the other greater, you know, broader messages of the book is to fling yourself out in the world. I mean, we live in such a voyeuristic culture now. Everybody kind of lives vicariously through their television or through the internet, and I've always been very much a get out there and do things sort of person. I moved to Italy when I was 17 with $1,000 and no credit cards, and you know, volunteered for animal groups while I was trying to study history. And I think everybody always has excuses for, you know, has reasons not to do certain things. And I think that you really, you know, life is there to be lived. And I think even if you put yourself in some compromising, risky positions, sometimes it's worth it to actually have experienced life. And I think by having that attitude and flinging myself into different animal campaigns like that, whether it's daring to dress as a Catholic priest and get my way into a fur fashion show as I did in Milan to protest it with a thou shalt not kill sign, I mean, it does make you almost get the run because the nerves are so strong. But, you know, the blood gets pumping and you put yourself out there, but you've, you know, maybe made people think about things a little bit differently once in a while.
For sure. Let me just remind our listeners, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. We're speaking with PETA Vice President Dan Matthews, whose new book is Committed, a Rabble Rouser's Memoir. You can join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. So as far as kind of first putting yourself out there, and I think, you know, it seemed like from what you just sort of discussed, that this is almost like an initial thing that I wanted to ask you about. Because really, amongst your first days at PETA, you started there in 85, maybe you could tell us about having sort of been newly hired there, that pivotal first encounter with Morrissey during the Smiths' first U.S. tour.
Yeah, well, I've been involved in PETA since the very first protest in Los Angeles in 1981 against an animal experimenter when I was in high school. But I had my own group in college. But then when I started working there in 1985, you know, I was part of the MTV generation, and PETA's backbone was undercover investigations and cruelty cases, which are still our backbone. But they only reach certain people. Not everybody follows the news. And I was very much aware that a lot of the younger generation who were always trying to reach weren't even watching the news because they were tuned on to MTV or in their, you know, embedded in youth culture to such an extent that they really don't look much beyond that. And so I always felt that, you know, animal rights, to be, you know, constantly relevant, had to have different personalities speaking for it. And at the time I started PETA in 1985, there was nobody hotter than the Smiths. Their album, Meat is Murder, entered the British charts at number one. It went gold in America. And it was the first time that pop culture, even though it was kind of an edgy part of pop culture, really embraced the animal rights message. And I felt it was really important to harness that and try to, you know, steer a lot of the people who, you know, heard about them and heard that record into getting involved. And so when the Smiths came around to their Meat is Murder tour, they weren't doing any press. Morrissey, the singer, wasn't doing any press at all, and it was impossible to get through. But a very good friend of mine from college, Patty, worked her charms on a roadie and ended up back at the Smiths Hotel and called me with Morrissey's room number. And I found him at like 1 in the morning and learned that, you know, sorry to call so late, but I really needed to interview him for this student animal rights newsletter because it's the only... With him on the cover, it's the only time kids would actually snap up the copies rather than rip them up, and agreed, and thus began a friendship which actually lasts to this day.
Right. No, absolutely. And it's so just the kind of scenes you create there. I mean, you know, then and now, I mean, I think a lot of people that have followed the Smiths and Morrissey, you know, would say, you know, whatever his many strengths and talents are, he's not necessarily the most kind of warm, friendly guy, depending on how well you know him or not. So, I mean, just it seemed like he just instantly kind of was sort of on your side when you called up out of the blue. And I'm wondering to what extent did that sort of almost guerrilla approach to interviewing him and his really, again, very cooperative, generous response serve as an epiphany, like a catalyst for subsequent efforts with rockers, actors, and other celebs?
Yeah, it actually gave me a lot of confidence because I was just some 20-year-old sitting there waiting for my friend to call after you know, bonking a roadie. It was pretty surly, actually. It was
right. But no, it was very effective. We got a few calls here, Dan. Let's take a call or two and see what people have to ask you about. Hi, you're on WMNF with Dan Matthews from PETA on Talking Animals.
Hey,
hello.
This is, my name's Justin, man.
Hi.
I'm calling from Tampa.
Okay.
And just a couple things I wanted to ask the guy.
Okay.
I'm full on for animal rights, everything like that, but I've got a problem with PETA that I figure maybe if I ask this guy, you know, he can explain it a little better.
Okay, his name is Dan, and let's hear your question quickly if we could.
All right, PETA is trying to pass something against pit bulls and similar breeds. Why?
Well, there's a horrible situation with pit bulls out there where we're against actually the breeding of any designer animals because there's so many unwanted animals in shelter by the millions who are being put down. And pit bulls are a danger, and so they're bred and they're brought up by, especially by certain owners who like to fight them to be aggressive, and they become a danger to communities, and they are, you know, it's kind of, they exist for the amusement of the people who have them, especially those who like to fight them. And I think anybody who is against animal cruelty is against that sort of thing. There are some pit bull owners who are great, and they don't fight their dogs, and they don't antagonize them and breed them to be aggressive, but by and large, there are people out there that do that, and so we do oppose that. We do oppose the breeding of pit bulls. We do oppose the breeding of any specific breed while there are so many unwanted animals in shelters.
But if that's the deal, then why put all of them down when you can just put the owners down for the same very same reasons, or try and pass some kind of law banning or putting some kind of, like, ownership act to where you've got to have some kind of papers and checkups to own and breed these kind of animals to make sure that they're not bred violently?
It would be great if we could do that, but the American Kennel Club and all the other powers that be who are really, really aggressively pro-breeding because it's their business, they fight all that stuff tooth and nail. And because there's popular sentiment against breeding pit bulls because of the public danger, it's something that we endorse and we agree with because it does eliminate a lot of cruelty.
Thanks for your call. We got a bunch of other calls here for Dan, so I'm going to move on. But thank you very much for your call. Hi, you're on WMNF with Dan Matthews from PETA on Talking Animals.
Hey, Dan. My name is Stuart. I'm calling from St. Pete. Just one quick question. With you, when you say for animal rights, as far as like controlled hunting with the deer back in, I think it was the 20s or 30s when they didn't have, you know, they stopped hunting of deers or earlier than that, where the deer population overtook destroying farmlands, vegetations. How do you stand on that? Do you think that they should just allowed to overrun, or do you think we should have controlled hunting?
Well, deers actually control their own populations by and large. They've been doing it for hundreds of thousands of years before guns came along in the last few hundred years. And I think when you take a look at the kind of animals that people like to hunt, they want to hunt trophy animals that have the antlers.
You're wrong. You're wrong on that.
Who do that. Well, there are people out there.
I'm sorry, there are some, but the majority of hunters do not go out there and trophy hunt. That is wrong when you say, if you're talking about deer in aspects like that, you are wrong. There are more going out for hunting for food, and yes, they do take their trophy with them, but 90% of them are food hunters.
They may hunt for food, but we're against that too. The only reason we believe in killing an animal is defense, and I think habitat enrichment is the more important thing to look at.
But if the deer population overruns, it destroys crops, trees, and vegetation. So that's perfectly okay with you, correct?
Ways that responsible farmers in a lot of regions, and not only in the U.S., but more especially in Germany and other countries, where they maintain the property so that the deer aren't able to overrun them. Any time we give people a blanket excuse to go hunting, I think it's wrong. In every case like that, and I think it's often just for people to go out and shoot animals. And
all right, thank you for your call. Thanks a lot for your call. Hi, you're on WMNF with Dan Matthews from PETA on Talking Animals.
Yes, I have a two-part question.
Okay, if you could make it just as short and quickly as you could, just because we're running short on time, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I wanted to find out what the status is of classifying bonobos, chimps, and gorillas into the genus Homo, and what is the status of giving those same simians legal rights in the courts. I know there's a lot of effort worldwide. I'd just like to hear where we're at with that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the question. Can you repeat it, Duncan?
Yeah, the question was, what's the status of bonobos and others being classified in the Homo genus, and then sort of generally, I guess, what the status, I might have missed this last part, about the simians and just...
Getting legal rights in the courts.
Right, I'm sorry.
There's actually a case going on in Texas right now that we've been spending a lot of time, a lot of resources on, in which it wasn't bonobos, it was actually chimpanzees who were part of a sanctuary that were sent there under contract from a laboratory to have lifetime care and to have their health looked after. And this pseudo sanctuary was so run down and so poor that the animals started one by one popping like flies. We actually went to court and were able to sue on the animals' behalf, even though we weren't the animals' custodians. But because of the contract in which these animals were had their care specified, a judge actually accepted the case and read the names of the defendants in court, the names of the animals, and that's the first time that's ever happened. And we look at cases like that to try to make legal precedent for animals, and it's very, very difficult, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of money to do it. But once that happens, it'll lead to a lot more broader protection for animals under the law, especially primates, the great apes, like chimpanzees, who are so close to us.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much for your call. We are just about nearing the end of our time. Dan, let me ask kind of another question, sort of spurred by the caller before the last one, and about hunting and your sort of response to that, which is basically that PETA, of course, is really not in favor of hunting or killing animals under any situation. I mean, something that's, of course, gotten quite a bit of media coverage in last couple of years, but periodically even prior to that, is the PETA employees who were caught actually killing animals and tossing them in a dumpster, and I think that is a practice that stretches back some years. Maybe you could just kind of speak to that for a moment.
Sure, that's a great question. It does surprise people that PETA euthanizes animals. We're actually registered in the state of Virginia, where we're based, to euthanize animals, and we are in a small southern town, and a lot of the outlying shelters, especially in North Carolina, have really, really abysmal policies as far as euthanasia. They let animals languish in these cement runs in their own feces and their own sick, and they have untreated wounds. And this is what happens in a lot of shelters, especially in these so-called no-kill shelters, which just mean that they turn people away when they have a certain number of animals, and people dump their animals in the street or shoot them or do other irresponsible things. So PETA has always advocated humane euthanasia of animals who are too sick or too aggressive to expect to be adopted. And this case in North Carolina, we had a situation with some shelters down there one hot summer day a few years ago in June, where two workers went down there and had to euthanize these animals. And it was quite a hot, stinky day, and the animals, of course, in the van make it quite an unpleasant smell. But these two staffers made a giant mistake by bagging the animals and putting them in a trash dumpster behind a grocery store, and they were actually arrested for it. And because it was so shocking that they euthanized the animals, the initial charges were animal cruelty, but a judge threw out those charges and simply charged them with littering. It was a very unfortunate case because it gave a lot of our work with shelters a black eye, but PETA's very transparent. We've always been very, very above ground about the need to have humane euthanasia rather than some of these atrocious policies that especially outlying shelters do. We actually have rebuilt shelters and trained shelter personnel not only in the Deep South, but in places like Puerto Rico, to euthanize animals humanely rather than letting them languish. We do believe there is a fate worse than death, and that's why we urge people to adopt, and that's why we urge things like the pit bull or other breeding bans until we can handle this animal overpopulation problem.
Okay, well, we're actually not only in our final moments, we're running behind, but we are speaking with Dan Matthews, the vice president of PETA, whose new book is Committed, a rabble-rouser's memoir. I got every single phone line lit up, and unfortunately, we're just, sad to say, out of time. But I do want to see Dan, if we can have you back another time soon, either to still talk about the book and offshoots of that. But it's I will say, I thought the book was just a really fun, informative read, and there's all kinds of great episodes in since that I was going to ask you about, but we got some really good calls and some really good responses from you that sort of chewed up that time. So we'll have you on again, I hope, soon. And
sounds great. Appreciate the time. Yeah, and it's the book's been going great. It was People Magazine's Buzz Book of the Week, and it's got a lot of outrageous things, but a lot of funny things as well. I hope people check it
absolutely out. Absolutely, and USA Today and all kinds of other folks, both mainstream and alternative, have covered it. So we hope to speak with you again, Dan. Thanks again for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Have me on. Take care.
All right. Thank you. So, yeah, I'm sorry, folks. Boy, we had so many people who really wanted to speak with Dan, but we just only have so much time. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. The show website is talkinganimals.net, which I hope you'll visit to sign up for our email newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, check out our calendar of Tampa pet events, make suggestions for future guests or topics, check out written pieces, including very nice articles about us that ran last week in Creative Loafing and in the Palm Beach Post. Our thanks to writers Alex Pickett and Janice Fontaine for that, and that's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except the tunes are always animal-related. There'll be a prize, a Talking Animals coffee mug, which I have to say makes coffee or any beverage taste just a little better, to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. Okay, it's Name That Animal Tune on WMNF with a nod to young Mike Strauss. Can you name that animal tune?
In the jungle?
Oh, so close, so close.
The mighty duck.
All right, too bad. Thanks for trying. Can you name that animal tune?
Hello, yes.
Hi, can you name that animal tune quickly?
Is it In the Jungle?
No, I'm sorry. Hi, can you name an animal tune?
Yes, it's the lions.
Close, but not quite.
Ah, all right.
Hi, can you name an animal tune?
Yeah, lion sleeps tonight.
There you go. What's your name?
Denise Lucenti.
Okay, stay on hold, Denise. I'll come back after the show and get your information. Okay, well, that's just about the end of our time here on WMNF Tampa. We'll be back June 13th. Stay tuned for NPR News, followed by Democracy Now! Don't miss Tropical Heatwave this Saturday, May 12th. And we'll catch you June 13th on WMNF Tampa. Check out talkinganimals.net for all your further info needs. Time for NPR News.
Today.